Now, also in the news this week, researchers in Toronto and in Cambridge have made a major breakthrough in understanding how DNA works. More specifically, how the same gene can produce different gene products in different types of cells. To tell us more is Yosef Barash from the University of Toronto. And tell us first, if you could, Yosef, what's the problem you've actually been grappling with? What are you trying to solve here?
Basically, the problem that we were handling, if I put it in one sentence, would be to figure out how alternative splicing works. Of course, that wouldn't mean much if I don't explain what is alternative splicing and why is it important. So I'll start off by starting with what people do know, and people do know usually about the genes and that they're coded in DNA molecules. And many people know that scientists about a decade ago mapped the human genome and that they found there are about 20,000 genes altogether in the human genome. What people usually don't know is that the same gene can actually code for different genetic messages in the form of messenger RNA molecules. And these different messages can operate quite differently in the cell.
So in other words, in different tissues, genes which have the same genetic code can have a different effect by effectively chopping the gene up in a slightly different way so it turns into a different recipe.
Exactly. So instead of a one gene, one product kind of model, we have a one gene, many products model. And what we were trying to figure out is how this works. So what is the code within the genetic code that tells the cell how, when, under certain, what conditions, et cetera, to perform these splicing variants.
So in a nerve cell, the same gene may do something completely different to a liver cell, but the big question is, how does it know it's a nerve cell or a liver cell, and therefore to behave differently?
Yeah, exactly.
And how did you approach that?
Basically, what we did is interdisciplinary research. We started off by doing experiments, and that was done at the Blanco lab, and we measured around 4,000 pieces called exons of genetic messages across 27 different mouse tissues. Then we analyzed the data to figure out how these changes occur, so the different inclusion or exclusion of these bits and pieces of the messages in the different tissues, how does it change? And then we went to the genome to figure out what is this code, what are the different components that determine these changes, so we can actually look at the genetic code and figure out, if we just look at it, what would be the changes in, say, brain versus liver, as you suggested.
So in other words, by looking at many thousands of genetic sequences and doing this lots and lots of times in lots of different tissues, you can begin to tie together how a different gene gets cut up in a different way in a specific tissue, and then you can begin to work out what sequences are hidden in the genetic material that's making that happen.
Exactly, and that's the computer science part of the research, the machine learning part of the research, exactly.
So presumably this is really important, because what it will enable us to now do is, when we want to do, say, gene therapy on something, up until now we've taken a very simple approach and said, this gene turns into this product in a cell, regardless of what cell type it is, so we just put the gene in and we'll get the product out. It hasn't always been as successful as we would have liked. Now we're in a position to apply the discovery you've made, which means that we can begin to ask, well, will this gene behave the way we think it will? So presumably your model will enable us to make predictions so that we can work out how genes will behave in different tissues.
Exactly. So once you have that program, that model, then you can look at areas that you've never seen before, you've never measured in the original experiments, and use the program to tell you what's going to happen. You can also relate certain, say, mutations to certain diseases, et cetera, and that's where a lot of the potential lies.
I was going to ask, presumably, we know that cancer killing one person in three is a genetic disease. Does this mean then that different cancers are going to behave differently in different tissues, or that the genetics of cancer is going to differ between tissues because of what you found?
So we're definitely going, this is one of these promising directions that we're going to do follow-up research, dedicated research. So instead of just looking at, say, different tissues, we're going to look at different diseases and disease versus normal or subtypes of diseases, as you mentioned, different types of cancer, et cetera, and concentrate on this. And in the study already published, we concentrated on certain neurological diseases and showed the relation between the code that we found and mutations in certain areas. So there's a lot of potential there, definitely.
And just to finish off, you've done this in mice. Is what goes for a mouse what goes for a person? Do the same messages hidden in the genetic sequence that make the cells chop genes up this way in mice also work in men?
Right. So that's an excellent question. So first off, in the original paper, what we did when we analyzed diseases, we analyzed areas which we know are conserved, and we were able to relate then the changes that we found using mouse genome to diseases in human. But of course, the next step is, of course, to analyze more data coming from human. That's what actually we're doing now. So this is sort of work in progress.
All right, well, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much. That's Joseph Barash from the University of Toronto. And you can read more about his work. He's published that amazing discovery in the journal Nature this week. We'll put references to that and, in fact, all of the news stories you've heard today on our website at nakedscientists.com/news.